Section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting, one show at a time.
You are about to enter the dirty stalls of It Burns When I Pee. This podcast is for mature audiences only. The views and opinions expressed on this show are usually rude, crude, and offensive, and should not be associated with our guests and sponsors in any way. Please proceed to the first available stall and prepare for takeoff.
Welcome, everyone, to another gripping episode of It Burns When I Pee, the number one podcast for roots music, adult comedy, and interviews. The podcasting god, Blake Clayton, along with his revolving group of co-hosts, are preparing for launch. Please adjust your volume, remove all morals and values, and prepare yourself for what we like to call auditory dysentery. We go live in
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
Mission control to podcasting god, you are clear to proceed. I repeat, you are clear to proceed.
Steer you wrong and lead you down darker roads, chasing some old song. Find yourself a woman and try to settle down. Pray that she don't break your heart and take to running round. If she does, you better let her go. Take it from someone who ought to know. Filled heart and ease your worried head. And if you need a friend, boy, he's easy to be found. But when your back's against that wall, he's bound to let you down. You ought to know a good friend's hard to find, especially when a woman is on the line. This mountain's where I'll die. heart, son, more than I could feel. It's love that put her in the ground. It's love that put me here. And I know I tore your whole wide world apart. I hope that you might take these words to heart.
Folks, welcome back to the Dirty Stalls of a Burns When I Pee, and with us tonight we have our special guest, Mr. Matt Woods. Matt, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, man, thank you for having me on.
So the new album is out with Love from Brushy Mountain, and it's getting a ton of great reviews. It's your third release. Do you feel that you're progressing as a songwriter, like, and musician with each release you've had?
Yeah, man, I think so. I think that's kind of always the goal. I think I would have cause to worry if I didn't feel like, you know, if I didn't feel like I was getting better, you know.
Sure.
Hopefully every record's better than the one before.
Well, the first song we listened to was the title track. How did that song come about?
That one came out of what Brushy Mountain was a state penitentiary, just pretty close to where I grew up, like where I spent my childhood. So, you know, I was always kind of aware of the prison there, and as a kid, I was kind of scared of it. You know, I was kind of scared of getting locked up, like they're gonna lock my little ass up, you know,
right.
All the shit I've been lying to them all about, and, you know, being mean to my little sister and whatever, but. I started working on the song after they shut the prison down. They shut the prison down a few years back, and I kind of, that's when I first started getting the thought in my head that, you know, it would be a good kind of like source material, something to work from. So that's kind of where it ended up kind of starting.
Awesome, and you know, it's a gradual process to becoming a full-time musician. Was it a gradual process for you, or did you kind of make a decision at a specific point in time, and how did it come about to where you finally decided that this is what you wanted to do and you were going to pursue it?
You know, it did come along gradually. I started playing years and years ago, kind of like just in and around Knoxville, like working inside the bar scene. And kind of doing things that way. So, I mean, after I did that for a little while, I was, you know, I felt like I was comfortable kind of cutting loose from the regular sort of weekly job and just kind of pursuing music full time. And that, you know, that grew into a couple of rock and roll bands that kicked around the Southeast and East Coast for a few years, to my eventually just sort of like striking out doing a solo thing on my own and pursuing it that way, which, you know, has now led to living on the road mostly, you know, like I'm traveling eight or 10 months out of the year.
Wow.
The last years anyway.
You know, life of a traveling musician obviously isn't glorious by any means, but have you had times of doubt, about this way of life, and how did you break through those to keep pursuing the career?
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you, dude. I love it. I've never really given given much thought to do anything else. I've just, you know, once I started writing and recording music and then hitting the road, and more I traveled, the more and more, you know, I realize that's what I'm meant to do, I guess, or not meant to do. It's what I know how to do, and it's what I enjoy doing. It's the only thing I really want to do. So, I mean, that's not to say there won't be a day, you know, or two kind of creep up on you when you're working through that hangover, wondering what the fuck you've done.
Right.
But those moments tend to pass pretty quickly, and you know, you make it to the show and set up, play the songs, and you know, hopefully there's some people there who appreciate what you got going on. You're like, oh yeah, this is
right.
This is why we're doing it, you know.
Right.
But,
so who is someone in your life that is probably your biggest supporter of your music?
My folks have been a huge support, man. Like, they have everything. They have all the t-shirts and everything. So I can't say enough, you know, to thank my folks for always offering encouragement, you know, especially kind of starting out.
Sure.
If I had to kind of like narrow that down, I've been lucky enough to find support from a lot of friends, family, and, you know, meeting folks all over the country. But my folks have been a huge, huge part of my life, and I'm thankful that they're there and they're supportive.
So I saw you play at Moonrunners this year, and Adam Lee came on stage, and you guys did a duet called, I'm assuming the name is They Call Me Bass. Sorry. I'm assuming the song is called They Call Me Bass and They Call Me Trouble. How did that...
Well, we call it Bass and Trouble.
Bass and Trouble. That probably would be the easier way to do it. Have you guys had any plans of recording that and releasing it anywhere?
Yeah, we certainly do. We wrote that duet about a little over a year ago now, I guess. Adam had the concept, and we were on tour together, kick around the Midwest and the South and everything, and he brought it up to me, mentioned the idea, and we wrote that song just kind of driving around, you know, like in the car. And the plan is certainly to record it and you know, maybe make like an EP or split 7-inch record. Sure. Or something like that with it. But there are no specific detailed plans as far as like a timeline.
Right.
Or anything like that. It's kind of like, you know, whenever the opportunity allows, you know, when he has the available time and I do as well, we're going to get together and go into the studio and cut it, maybe cut a few other tracks as well.
It was definitely a one of those good time, like good feeling songs. Like when you guys started playing it, everybody just, you know, everybody really got into it.
Yeah, it's fun to play. It's a hell of a lot of fun to play. It was even more fun to write. You know, it's rare that I get the opportunity to write with other songwriters, and especially with somebody like Adam, who, you know, Adam's one of my best friends, and just being able to kind of work together on something was a hell of a lot of fun.
It was pretty easy calling out the bass and the treble people, right?
Yeah, right.
So I recently heard an interview with you on S&M Radio with my good friend Shannon, and you were
right.
You kind of described the forming of a song, and you said when it's ready to come out. How do you know as a songwriter when a song is ready to come out?
It just hits you, you know. I don't know how to say that any differently. Like, it just, you know. Sometimes it's just a line or a piece of something, you know, but when it's there, you know, and you realize, or when it's there, it's there. And I got to do whatever I can to kind of like see my way through it.
Sure.
and let it kind of go where it's meant to go.
A lot of napkins and scrap piece of paper all over the place.
Yeah, a lot of that, man. A lot of that. A lot of notes just kind of jotted down and tucked away. I've got the smartphone here with the notes, and I can just scroll through notes and notes for days. And sometimes you'll have one that'll just hit, and the whole damn thing will just come, you know.
Sure. So when did you start writing your own songs?
Oh, man. I started writing my own songs as a teenager, you know, long before I was ever able or interested in doing much with it, you know. I haven't played in years, but there's a song I wrote, I think, when I was maybe 17 years old, but every blue moon would still kind of poke its head out at a show and make an appearance.
Awesome. And what are some of the things that you've learned about songwriting, you know, since you started? What are some of the techniques that you've learned?
I think I've learned not to concern myself too much with what other people think. You know, I think that was the biggest thing. I think when I was younger and working in these rock bands and whenever I would worry a little more about how something may go over or be perceived by an audience. And these days I just kind of let it come as it's meant to come and try to say what I mean to say as succinctly as possible. Not worry about who likes it, who doesn't like it, how long or short it may be. I had a gal in Nashville. I played Dead Man's Blues at an open mic. I tend to avoid those, but I was hanging out with some buddies of mine, and we all jumped up and did a round. And the gal told me after it was over, she's like, I really loved it. I love that song. She's like, you could get up here and play anytime you want to, honey. And she's like, just next time, try to remember to keep it a radio time. And I'm like, what the fuck's radio time? Right. You know, what's that mean? You know, like, right. What's it mean? Radio time 1989 was about 5.5 minutes, wasn't it?
In regards to songwriting, I thought about this question as I was listening to the CD again today, just kind of to refresh myself and get ready for the interview. But what do you think it is that is so, you know, a lot of songs are about killing your significant other, you know, in music in general. Where do you think that, where do you think that comes from?
I don't know. I mean, deep-seated frustration, most likely.
Right.
I really don't know. I think it's not. That's not only in songwriting. I think that's sort of in, you know, folk tales and storytelling, dating way on back.
But it's definitely one of those go-tos.
I mean, it's certainly a recurring human theme, isn't it?
Right. Exactly. And you know it. That's the way I think that's everybody has that in their mind at one point or another, just like, ugh, if I had the balls. Yeah. So, you know, with mainstream country being as far away from traditional country and roots music as anywhere, you know, the goal of getting big record contracts and, you know, being on the radio and having sold out arena shows is pretty much unobtainable, I'd say, by 99% of the artists. It's more of a how much money do you have and how much luck do you have. But what are some of the goals that you have for yourself as an independent, you know, artist, and what are you trying to achieve in your career? I mean, there's obviously things that you want to do, but what are some of the things that you kind of measure your career on, I guess is a way to put it?
I think the most important thing for me is to continue to reach people. You know, like that could sum up my overall goal, regardless of like what sorts of tactics I use to do that. The point for me is to try and reach as many people as possible, and as long as things are moving forward and I can see the growth. You know, like the crowds at the shows tend to grow, or you know, more folks are trying to help me spread the word about what I'm doing, or sharing the records or whatever. That's that's the indication to me that things are going in the right direction. But, you know, the rest of it's just all sort of, the rest of it's just all how you get there, you know, like some dudes do that without touring all the time. It makes sense for me to be on the road. Like it's a thing that makes sense in my head somehow. So that's what I do. I mean, we've got plans to shoot some more music videos. I think having the music video for Dead Man's Blues was a huge help in kind of like spreading the word and getting the song heard. But overall, my goal is just to continue to be able to do what I'm doing and hopefully reach a few new people every time around and try to turn people on, you know?
And with, you know, with the internet nowadays, I mean, it makes it even easier for independent, you know, artists to get their music out to it. A lot of people, like you said, with, you know, some of people don't tour a whole bunch and you can still get it out there. Whereas before, if you didn't get that contract, you know, or if you didn't go to Nashville and quote unquote strike it big, nobody ended up hearing from you except for the, you know, 120 miles around that you kept plugging away at every bar.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the internet's a huge help. I think it's a great tool, you know, for being heard and for getting your stuff out there. The flip side of that is with that, there are far more, you know, far more people. There's a lot more noise out there in competition, you know, like it doesn't, you know.
It's easy for somebody.
Basically, anybody can make a record these days now in their bedroom and get it out there on the internet and push it. And sometimes those records are really good, you know, and sometimes they're not. So that's kind of the good and the bad of the internet. But I think especially for me and I imagine for a lot of dudes who are working on the same kind of level without, you know, the internet and music blogs, podcasts, and internet radio and social media, it would be, you know, exponentially more difficult to build an audience and have your music heard.
Awesome. You know, for the new album, you did something a little different for your pre-sales. You offered a lot of different packages with different incentives, including like handwritten lyrics and autographed copies and stickers and such. Which was, to me, was an interesting way of promoting and kind of boosting that the pre-sale. How did that business model work for you on this new album?
It worked out real well, man, I'm pleased to say. Essentially what we did is we took the idea that a lot of bands have been kind of using for a while now, like with companies like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and just did that same sort of campaign except without going through a company like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. We just did it all directly from our website. It was pretty well received.
I thought it was definitely a creative way of doing it and a fresh way of doing it, really. You know, instead of having the Kickstarters and just hoping and, you know, praying that you got what you needed this way, you know, there was different levels, you know, and you got more for each level. And so it was really cool. I commend you for that. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, thanks, man. That was the idea. The thing is, like, the record's coming out anyway you cut it, you know?
Right.
The record at that point, by the time we rolled the pre-order out, it was made, you know, it was mixed, mastered and already off to you know, pressing and everything. So it wasn't like some folks I think use the Kickstarter and they try to raise the money so they get in and go to the studio and really do that thing. And we didn't really want to do that. We wanted to just, here's the record and here's what we had to offer and all of the support we could get is helpful and needed, and that we didn't want to just ask for that help blindly. We wanted people to have the option to help however they felt like they wanted to help, and in return get something kind of unique and something that they could maybe keep, like those like handwritten lyrics or whatever. And we one of the packages had like house shows and stuff. So I've been in the process of scheduling some house shows for people who ordered those to pre-order too.
Awesome. So what is your favorite part of the country to travel through while you're on tour?
That's hard to say, man. I've got a lot of spots I really love for sure. I spend a lot of time in Central Florida. I get a lot of love down there, and I like spending time down there. Plus Larry, who's out on the road playing drums with him now. He lives in Orlando, so that's kind of like a home away from home. We've been out here out west now for the last month or so, and I will have to say that the Northwest is beautiful. I love, you know, getting the chance to hang out in the Pacific Northwest, but shoot, there are things to admire about most places.
Sure.
I found.
So what do you have planned for the summer?
This tour wraps up the 22nd of June, at which point I'll go home and spend about 3 weeks before turning around and heading back out again, man. I'll be back in Illinois, middle of July.
Awesome.
And just kind of, I'm trying to keep it on the road as much as I can, man. So we've got a couple of festivals coming up, one this weekend in Colorado, next weekend in Western Nebraska. We'll be at the Muddy Roots Festival over Labor Day this weekend, but this year. So that's the plan, man. I'm going to do a stretch of dates with my buddy Caleb Caudill in August. He's going to run from Florida out through Texas with me. He's a songwriter from New Orleans. So that's it, man. Just keep the wheels moving.
Matt Woods, the man who never stops, right?
Or so far.
Well, and the most important, where do folks go to order the new CD and also to check out your tour dates and catch up on all the Matt Woods news?
They can do all of that from my website. It's therealmattwoods.com. We've got the new CD available, vinyl available, downloads, whatever. It's also up on iTunes and Amazon, Spotify, Bandcamp, and all the other kind of regular internet spots you can download music.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you very much for being on the show. I finally got to meet you in Chicago. We didn't get to talk too much, but I definitely wanted to have you on the show, and it was a perfect time because you have the new album coming out. Congratulations on the album.
Thanks, man. I really do appreciate it.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
No problem. And now we're going to listen to another track called Dead Man's Blues. And again, thank you very much, Matt.
All right, talk to you soon.
Don't bother calling up my telephone. We both know how this night is. Just shut the light and put a record on. It won't be long till I make dark your trap house door again. And strolling with those rings around my eyes. How I do declare, darling, you're a sign. Shake off just a little of the cold. You know I never meant to grow so old. I'm a first place loser, last place friend, roadhouse preacher till stage lights dim and turn me out to the dark again. Don't worry, singing the dead man's blues, fumbling around.
to lose. Like I don't want it all. Hell, I don't want it all. Don't bother calling up my telephone. We both know how this night ends.
Are you a blogger or a podcaster, or you're just not happy with your web hosts? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free site builder, and the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use the special coupon code Section 8686, you'll save 25% off your web hosting packages. What do you got to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs.